Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila Chapter 21 The Opulence and Sweetness of Lord Shri Krishna Verse 221, 105 to 121, page 13. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, Ornaments caress that body, but the transcendental body of Krishna is so beautiful that it beautifies the ornaments he wears. Therefore, Krishna's body is said to be the ornament of ornaments. Enhancing the wonderful beauty of Krishna is his three-curved style of standing. Above all these beautiful features, Krishna's eyes dance and move obliquely, acting like arrows to pierce the minds of Srimati Radharani and the gopis. When the arrow succeeds in hitting its target, their minds become agitated. The beauty of Krishna's body is so attractive that it attracts not only the demigods and other living entities within this material world, but the personalities of the spiritual sky as well, including the Narayanas, who are expansion of Krishna's personality. The minds of the Narayanas are thus attracted by the beauty of Krishna's body. In addition, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmis, who are the wives of the Narayanas and are the women described in the Vedas as most chaste, are also attracted by the wonderful beauty of Krishna. Favoring the gopis, Krishna rides on the chariots of their minds, and just to receive loving service from them, he attracts their minds like Cupid. Therefore, he is also called Madan Mohan, the attractor of Cupid. Cupid has five arrows, representing form, taste, smell, sound, and touch. Krishna is the owner of these five arrows, and with his Cupid-like beauty, he conquers the minds of the gopis, though they are very proud of their super-excellent beauty. Becoming a new Cupid, Krishna attracts their minds and engages in the rasa dance. When Lord Krishna wanders in the forest of Vrindavan with his friends on an equal level, there are innumerable cows grazing. This is another of the Lord's blissful enjoyments. When he plays on his flute, all living entities, including trees, plants, animals, and human beings, tremble and are saturated with jubilation. Tears flow constantly from their eyes. Krishna wears a pearl necklace that appears like a chain of white ducks around his neck. The peacock feather in his hair appears like a rainbow. And his yellow garments appear like lightning in the sky. Krishna appears like a newly risen cloud, and the gopis appear like newly grown grains in the field. Constant rains of nectarine pastimes fall upon these newly grown grains, and it seems that the gopis are receiving beams of light from Krishna, exactly as grains receive life from the rains. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is full in all six opulences, including his attractive beauty, which engages him in conjugal love with the gopis. Such sweetness is the quintessence of his qualities. Sugadeva Goswami, the son of Vyas, has described these pastimes of Krishna throughout Srimad Bhagavatam. Hearing the descriptions, the devotees become mad with love of Godhead. End quote. Just as the women of Mathura ecstatically described the fortune of the gopis of Vrindavan and the transcendental qualities of Krishna, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described the different mellows of Krishna and became overwhelmed with ecstatic love. Grasping the hand of Sanatan Goswami, he recited the following verse. Quote, what austerities must the gopis have performed? With their eyes they always drink the nectar of the form of Lord Krishna, which is the essence of loveliness and is not to be equated or surpassed. That loveliness is the only abode of beauty, fame, and opulence. It is self-perfect, ever fresh and unique. Footnote 13. This verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 10:44-14 was spoken by the women of Mathura when they saw Krishna in the wrestling arena. The bodily beauty of Sri Krishna is like a wave in the ocean of eternal youth. In that great ocean is the whirlpool of the awakening of ecstatic love. The vibration of Krishna's flute is like a whirlwind, and the flickering minds of the gopis are like straws and dry leaves. After they fall down in the whirlwind, they never rise again, but remain eternally at the lotus feet of Krishna. O my dear friend, what severe austerities have the gopis performed to drink this transcendental beauty and sweetness through their eyes in complete fulfillment? Thus they glorify their births, bodies, and minds. The sweetness of Krishna's beauty enjoyed by the gopis is unparalleled. Nothing is equal to or greater than such ecstatic sweetness. Even the predominating deities of the Vaikuntha planets, the Narayanas, do not possess such sweetness. Indeed, none of the incarnations of Krishna up to Narayana possess such transcendental beauty. The vivid evidence in this regard is that the dearest consort of Narayana, the goddess of fortune, was worshipped by all chaste women, gave up everything in her desire to enjoy Krishna, being captivated by his unparalleled sweetness. Thus she took a great vow and underwent severe austerities. The quintessence of Krishna's sweet bodily luster is so perfect that there is no perfection above it. He is the immutable mind of all transcendental qualities. In his other manifestations and personal expansions, there is only a partial exhibition of such qualities. We understand all his personal expansions in this way. Both the gopis and Krishna are complete. The gopis' ecstatic love is like a mirror that becomes newer and newer at every moment and reflects Krishna's bodily luster and sweetness. Thus competition increases. Since neither give up, their pastimes become newer and newer, and both sides constantly increase. The transcendental mellows generated from the dealings between the gopis and Krishna cannot be tasted by means of fruit of activity, yogic austerity, speculative knowledge, regulative devotional service, mantra yoga, or meditation. The sweetness can be tasted only through the spontaneous love of liberated persons who chant the holy names with great ecstatic love. Such ecstatic transactions between Krishna and the gopis are possible only in Vrindavan, which is full of the opulences of transcendental love. The form of Krishna is the original source of all transcendental qualities. It is like a mine of gems. The opulences belonging to all the personal expansions of Krishna are to be understood to be bestowed by Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is the original source and shelter of everyone. So again here, source and shelter. You know, the thing, how he's... That always these two principles are going to be there. So as it goes down, it always is. But here you see it, it's in its most wonderful position. So that's here. Beauty, humility, mercy, merit, patience, and expert intelligence are all manifested in Krishna. But besides these, Krishna has other qualities like good behavior, mildness, and magnanimity. He also performs welfare activities for the whole world. All these qualities are not visible in expansions like Narayana. Srila Prabhupada. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura mentions that the qualities of beauty, humility, mercy, merit, patience, and expert intelligence are brilliant qualities. And when they are exhibited in the person of Narayana, one should know that they are bestowed upon Narayana by Krishna. Good behavior, mildness, and magnanimity are found only in Krishna. Only Krishna performs welfare activities for the whole world. So, as you're going... means Krishna himself, because he's the origin of all these, then that specialness, because beauty is the original opulence. From that, all the other opulences expand. So because of that point of beauty, he has that complete, unlimited beauty that you won't see in any other form of the Lord. You just won't see that. So that's why all the others are any feature of the Lord is attractive. But Krishna is always going to be the most attractive. And we can see is that the Narayanas themselves are attracted, the Lakshmis are attracted, all other forms are all attracted. because this beauty is the most wonderful, right? And it's newer and newer, fresher and fresher. So as Krishna means, he is more beautiful than the gopis, then they become inspired, then Krishna becomes more, so they just it just keeps increasing unlimitedly. That's the whole point, is he is the unlimited source of everything. So here we're used to the thing that there's a cause and effect, but because the cause and effect that we're used to dealing with has their own, therefore then we're always used to this idea that, you know, it's not complete. Yes. And also here everything's temporary, so the cause and effect here also is temporary. But that's the unique of Krishna. It's not. He's unlimited. He doesn't have that aspect. So therefore the qualities can be increasing unlimitedly, and the taste. And so this taste can't be gained by any other process. That's why even though we see the acharyas are so intelligent, but it's not on intelligence that they base the Krishna conscious progress and taste. Right, means they have the knowledge, they know how to deal, but you see their intelligence when they're applying it into correcting people and showing them the correct path in devotional service, or being clever in how to very nicely serve Krishna. But that's all there. But the speculative aspects and all these aren't important for them, because the taste they're getting is so far beyond. That therefore, these tastes and yoga and all these other aspects aren't important to them. That's the point, because it's about the taste. It's not about the particular situation, the particular endeavor that's being made and all that. Because you see in this whole wonderful explanation of Lord Chaitanya, it's all about the moods and the interactions. Like that. It's the particular activities that are done are just ways to create variety and expression of that. That's its purpose. So like this morning we were discussing, you have an object, a form that is there, that's manifest by the sundani potency. It's only there because it assists in the pastimes. Right? The Kriya Shakti then makes things by that willpower then function. You know, people have a desire to do something, but it's only because of its support of fulfilling Krishna's interest. Does that make sense? It doesn't have any other purpose. It all comes back to this and Krishna. So that's why Krishna is the supremely attractive, and he's the source of everything. Yes.
Speaking of Krishna's beauty, enhances the gopis' desires to serve him and to be with him, and their beauty increases manyfold.
Yes.
Back and forth.
Yes.
Is that beauty? The dynamic of this beauty is only in the context of their particular rasa, or when the gopis deal with other members of the community, they also see their beauty.
Means that beauty will be appreciated, but naturally one's going to appreciate in the context of one's own position. Means it's just like we see even Bhishma Dev on the bed of arrows is talking about the glory of the gopis. So everyone can appreciate the glorious position that the gopis have, but the specific taste, no. There's an appreciation that their affection is so great for Krishna. You know, it's the best. That they can appreciate. So there'll be that aspect, but it doesn't mean that it'll be other. They don't taste that. You know, so that's the whole thing. So the taste is coming from the interaction of their moods. It's not that someone did this and so someone else did that and that kind of that. Which is, you know, we may start there and appreciate that aspect in the pastimes, but actually it's much beyond that. You know, because it mentioned about Krishna's color and Krishna's threefold bending form and his sidelong glances, that's all the more that it mentioned. And then it just means, from this, then his interaction with the gopis, then their interaction with Krishna, it's just mentioned that dependency is nourished, like, you know, the fresh rains then nourish the fresh grains. Because the fresh cloud, then that gives that fresh rain, and then the fresh grains, then they are nourished and grow from that. So that's the level on which it's happening. So that beauty is the mood. It's not. It means they will also be physically the most beautiful girls in the cosmos. You know, not just create cosmos, but that's not the main aspect of the beauty.
It's
the mood. You know, it means like even you can see here. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but sometimes you have these. You know, like these very beautiful person. And they're looking very attractive, but something happens and their concentration goes into that thing and that beauty all just disappears. I mean, the physical beauty's still there, but that glow, that attract, is gone for a minute. And then something comes up and then they're back and then there it is again. So that's why it'll say that this happens, they're looking dark because the mood just went down. It's not that they're necessarily the physical color changes, but because the mood, it gives a dark aspect to it. And when it's bright, it gives a glow to it. So we're dealing with a much more subtle, you know, transcendental aspect of moods. That's why in Nectar of Devotion, you see the emphasis is on the moods, the tastes, not necessarily on what's done. You know, examples will be given so you can put it into context, but it's not talking about the pastimes, you know, just a run of that. That's where taste is. That will be in those shastras. But you see, as if he wants to, he can easily do that. You know, in the Lalita Madhava, then he brings that out. But he's the acharya of the Abhideya, of that inspiration to serve and the moods and what are the various techniques and ways in which that's done. So it's, yes, you can memorize all these things and all that, and it makes for an easy conversation. Like was mentioned before, is that someone was doing a course on the Nectar Devotion, and to join the course, you had to have had memorized all the, you know, all the bhavas, the 33 sanchari bhavas, all the other things. You had to have all that memorized. So you had to have, you know, 50, 60 different things memorized, you know what it was, because in the class they're just going to go through the things like this. And intellectually, yes, you'll be able to go through and say this is here and that's there and all these different things. And that would be very nice as far as the Sambandha Gyan aspect and as far as discussing, you know, situational. But as far as taste, there's a good chance that except for the intellectual dynamism that's there, that will be the taste. Yeah. Individuals might have taste because they are able to function on that level, but it's not important. But and then they get a taste. So we're not saying you can't, but the point is to make those things as the basis of the whole process, then limits it as to what it is. Then it makes it an academic exercise. You know what I'm saying? So you see there's a difference in the things. You know, it's like one is that you've done all these things and you've done that, and that you know this and you know that, and what are the 12 this and the 5 that and all those things, and then they get very good marks. You know, those who really put in the work and everything like that. Especially if they were good at material academic education, because they've taught them just how to do that. But when it comes to actually understanding the philosophy and not being weird, it's not even addressed. It's not touched upon. Because all it is, you did the 12 this and the 5 that, you got a good mark, you passed.
But no rati.
Yeah, but no rati. But you bring up that, you know, but what about this and what about that and why can't I this and why can't I that? Then we have a point of discussion. Is that no, this is not a pure devotional attitude. People are freaked out and this and that, and you know, why am I coming to this class? Nobody talks like to me like this. Because like, yeah, no one's told you what pure devotional service is. You know, that's not our problem. You know what I'm saying? So it's a different approach like that. So not that kind of level is not a great level. I'm sure you'll see in the future people who have such good memories that they've heard it and then they can remember it and they can discuss it and have the taste, you know, and appreciate the process and all that. But, you know, that'll be the rare person nowadays and probably more general in the future, you know, when you have more qualified individuals. But the aspect is that Krishna's beauty it's that qualities, because it's mentioned, Srila Prabhupada points out that Rupa Goswami is attracted by Krishna's qualities. That's the prominent element. So it's with the qualities that everything gets expressed, everything gets done. Because you're going to do an activity, it's done through qualities. While we look at it, no, the mechanics get done and all that. And that's what's important. Like you see, especially as you become more professional and more corporate, that it's about, except for the qualities of, you know, you're going to get it done, you know, hell or high water, no matter what the expense is to yours or others' relationships. And so, therefore, the mechanics go on very nicely. That's very much respected in the modern society. But in the Vedic, these would be considered animals. You know? I mean, the spider, it can build a nest, a web that, you know, what professional today could make? Spider-Man, okay. That people do appreciate Spider-Man. But he's doing something. He's not just an academic. Though he is very intelligent. He is very, very educated. You know? So that's that kind of technical point or management, like we were saying before, is that you have a queen termite. She's managing 1 million termites in a full, you know, nest. A full nest, once it gets to its natural full, it's 1 million. That's how many she manages. Now, that's a good manager. You know, how many people can say that they're actually directly controlling 1 million people? That you can see the line all the way going down. You know, others, yeah, okay, there's there, but, you know, there's so many things going on. You know? Does that make sense? You know, I mean, in other words, in her hive, you don't have people driving around in their 4x4 truck with shotguns in the back, you know, window doing donuts, you know, and yelling and screaming with, you know, with their arms out the window with bottles of beer in it. She's not going to have that. It's not happening. They're going to be working. You know, so she has direct control of 1 million living entities.
And she's a woman.
And she's a woman. Now there's feminine empowerment. Confirmed.
Somebody was here and just fell down.
Yeah. So,
which relates to Srimati Radharani's ability to control Krishna and to have all the gopis and all the manjaris serving him.
Yeah, and it's all done through affection. See, that's the thing, is the control is done out of the affection, not out of fear, not out of this. If it didn't work for the Red Queen, it's not going to work for anybody else. You know, so that's the whole thing, is that it's about personal relationship. That's the whole Vedic thing, is how through relationships everything works. Everybody, all the Narayans, they're all attracted to Krishna, all the Lakshmis. And they, you know, you don't get more qualified than these individuals.
So how do you shift from the mechanical, intellectual outlook on looking at the pastime to the text? Is it the pure chanting?
Is there a mechanical process? What's the mechanical process to switch from the mechanical process?
Right.
It's
the pure chanting.
The pure chanting. The main point is chanting in good association, trying to avoid the offenses. That's the actual thing that works. That's why the emphasis should be on that. Because other things are just, in other words, organization is to manage that more people can be involved in this. That's what it's for. Yes. But managing just to have meetings so that, you know, you can say that you manage something, you know, the taste of having a meeting, that's okay, nice for a particular conditioning. But as far as the movement goes, then, It's not necessarily dynamically moving it forward as far as Krishna consciousness goes. Organizationally, you may be able to put certain things in place, but if that was what makes perfection, then you know some of these big multinational companies would be, you know, be all great devotees. But they're not. You know, and even how good they do, there's some of the, you know, I mean, look at what Indra does, you know. He's got 33 million guys working for him, controlling everything, I don't know if there's like a demigod for each of your eyelashes or whatever it is, but there's 33 million that run everything. Now that's a big government. You know, no one has that big of a government. These are guys that actually do something. We're not talking about the peons. That's all the other people. So you know, very major. And this is actually run by eight. The eight main positions, they're the one that makes everything work, and all the others are assisting. You know, so like that. And then on top of that, you have Brahma, who can just sit there. Right? So it's, you have all these great things, but that's, they all point out that this is not, you know, and these are managers. And they point out that this is not the ultimate. And then you have all the great yogis, all the great, scholars and jnanis, and they say, they all say, this is not the real thing. The real thing is that. So, yes, according to your nature, you engage that and you do something big and grand, and that's what we're trying to do. But it should be understood as you're trying to make what grand? The hearing and chanting process and the association of pure devotees. That's what we're trying to make grand. So therefore, then it's cultural revolution. So therefore it gets better and better. Culturally. And that doesn't mean that, you know, it's hashtag, you know, how you say, anybody under 3 foot, you know, talls, life matters, or, you know, this kind of jazz. Guys in pinstripe suits, you know, lives matter. You know, so this is not what it's about. Point is if you respect all living entities, that includes everybody. Why only this group? Why not all the other groups? Why not the animals? You know, that's Prabhupada's point. Is you saying, oh, you have to worry about all this is happening to these people, but what's happening to all the animals? They're also citizens. Right? They're citizens of the state, just because they're not so smart, but then kids aren't so smart either. Do we eat them? You know, dogs aren't that smart. We don't eat them. Other countries do. You know, so the whole thing is it comes about is that we have to appreciate is that the real thing is this hearing and chanting and the association of pure Vaishnavas. And then, because it's so wonderful, you're trying to give that to as many people as possible. Baba's point was, you're hearing that, you're saved. Try to save as many other people as you can in how much time you have here. So that's what's being trying to done. And of that, if you even convince one person, bring them to that platform, then it's perfect. And then it's a success. So you're trying for unlimited, and you know, even if it's one, it's perfect. Otherwise, not that, oh, I'm doing the big service, you're not doing, no. It's about, you're trying to, Prabhupada's point was quality in quantity. Right? Because some go for quantity, some go for quality. But Prabhupada's was quality in quantity. So that always has to be seen. And so that's why then, we have big organization, but at the same time is everyone's a humble servant of the Lord. Then you have that perfect combination. Because you see, like we said before, we saw in the Puri pastimes, you have how many devotees already in Puri and how many devotees coming down from Bengal. And when they arrive, there's already prasad. Like the king gave the order. The king's on the roof. He sees them. Make sure they all get prasad. And we see is then they go, they meet, they like this, they go, and there's prasads there. And it's served.
Hot.
Hot. You know, it's all that, and it's all perfectly served and all that. It's not that everybody's sitting there in the line and one guy's going down and, you know. You're like this and that, you know, everyone starves to death. By the time he gets to the end, there's a skeleton there, you know, like that. It's being done very, very nicely. So that means there's excellent organization. But it's not talked about because, of course, there's supposed to be organization, but it's not the prominent thing.
It's a relationship.
Yeah. So it's about the relationship. It's about, and it's not about the sentimental aspect of the relationship. It's about the dynamic aspect of the relationship, and the sentiment will be tasted. So it's just a matter of shifting the mindset that yes, the knowledge and skills and these mechanical elements are important, but the attitude that's there, the qualities in which you work with, the nature of the willpower, that's more important, and that is to please Krishna, and how to please Krishna, because we don't know, but how the acharyas say, that's the most important. So if we shift it, that, because when we say knowledge and skills, you know, it's a knowledge, skills, values like this, and try to accompany the whole thing, but that's only dealing with your personal development on that level of who you are, the sambandha aspect. But what about the abhideya and the prayojana? You know what I'm saying? So it's not enough, because it's knowledge. Okay, knowledge of what? Knowledge of Krishna, skills. It's skills within Krishna consciousness and practicing Krishna consciousness, and values within Krishna consciousness, values of you know, the good qualities, humility, tolerance, pridelessness, respect for others. You know, if we're dealing with pridelessness, why would Uma be a big deal? It would never be brought up. Everybody knows that. They've known that forever. Why would it be a thing? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the whole point is where are these things? Forgiveness, that's the main quality of a Brahmin. No one forgives anything for anybody. Unless you're administration, that's okay. It means politically correct, excuse me. Have to be specific here. You know, so the thing is where are these qualities? That's what we're supposed to be working on. But we say, oh, if you have the knowledge and skill, then they're important. No. Knowledge and skill, great, that's a good foundation. Now, with the proper attitude that's developed from chanting and hearing and serving Krishna and the association of the Vaishnavas, now with that, now do that to please Krishna. Now that's the thing. That's what has to be overseen. That's what we need leadership in. That's what we need that vision in. It's not sentiment, it's practical. That's the point. Vedic is science. This is applicable. But if you don't know that science, you know what I'm saying? Otherwise, if all you know is De Bono's hats, then great. But how many people that know De Bono's hats understand what's Sambandha, what's Abhideya Prayojana, which of that is Sankarshan, which is Pradumna, Aniruddha, and Vasudeva, and how they mix together? Ever heard that discussion with De Bono's hats? No. You don't know De Bono's hats?
No, he doesn't.
You know? Nobody knows De Bono's hats.
You?
Because we're from different parts of the world.
Nobody's American here. If
yes.
It is an American thing.
What to do?
Maybe it's from Bali. Who knows?
Yeah, well, the Americans are there fighting over how to do it. The Bengalis come in and the Patels and all that and just take over, right? You know? Yeah, so you have all these different things.
De
Bono's hats. De Bono is he's one of these wallahs that deals with how to management and how to make things work. Like, he'll go into a company, sit everybody down, show how the hats work and all that. In 45 minutes, they work out how everything works and everything like that. So that's why I can't figure out why in 20 years they haven't figured out these things. So he'll go in. So That means you have complete meetings in that. This idea that you have to have for days and days and days, no managers do that. You know? So the whole thing is, you know, it's basically, it's a similar thing of strategic planning of, you know, what is your goal, what do you have, where are you going, what do you have to work with, and all that. So he gives them all different colored hats. It's just some trick to make people be able to think. And then the problem comes is that, you've ever heard the thing is, well, I was wearing my this hat? You ever heard that phrase?
Yeah.
That comes from this principle. You know, I got my manager's hat on. That's why I'm dealing with you like an asshole. You know, like that, because, and that you can't get upset with me because I got my manager hat on. And when I got my manager hat on, I can do whatever the hell I want. You know, but when I take that off and put on my friend hat, okay, now we're buddy-buddy and all this, and you should completely not ignore whatever I did to you and destroyed your life with my management hat on. That's the weakness of the hat system.
They say they're wearing too many hats.
That's another thing, is that, but they don't know what the hats are or how to wear them. That there is meaning, hats means I have responsibilities.
Yes.
Here is what he's talking about is you have one thing, but what you're doing with it, what are your tools, what are your goals, what are you trying to do? It's basically just another form of strategic planning. But it was out before strategic planning became popular in the corporate world. Yeah, like that. So he's got a white hat, a green hat, a this hat, a that, you know. So then when someone goes, oh, what hat is that? And then so it's not about which one you're wearing, which one you're discussing. Oh, we're discussing the green. Oh, okay, so that's why, you know. So it's just one technique like that. And I've seen devotees use it, and it works very well. But the thing is, you can take it back to what its original in the Vedic understanding, then it has much more access into the devotees' lives. So otherwise, you take what the karmis do, it has limited access. You know, if you're already doing that, then okay, then use it for Krishna. But if you're not doing that now, after all this time, then maybe it's not you? You know? Does that make sense? If by bringing it out, it makes sense to you and you can use it immediately, great. But if not, then maybe it's not your thing. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that you have to be very, very careful. Is that the mechanics are there and we see how expertly it's going on, as Mataji pointed out. The mechanical management of the cosmos is done by women. Is when it comes down to these little things, but that's the thing, they can do it and maintain the personal. But at the same time, as if it comes to kicking your backside when you deserve it, there's no sentiment. You know, so it works. So that's the thing, the Sandini already arranges all this. But the point is it's about the prayojana of pleasing Krishna. So that's there, and it's one of the aspects that then supports the samvit, which then supports the hladi. So as servants of Radharani, then that's the main thing. And so all the elements of the samvit and sandini, those are all, their value is their use in serving, pleasing Krishna through pleasing Radharani, means through pleasing Rupa Goswami, means pleasing the previous acharyas, means pleasing Srila Prabhupada. Is that, you know, so that's how it's working. So these means all these things, because they're all Krishna's. If they work, it's because they're Veda. But the problem is not knowing they're Veda, we use them in our own speculative way. So that's what you had brought up. So when we start to see it in the context of Krishna. So in the beginning, yes, you do it in just I use it as it is for Krishna. But with time, I start to see as well, how does it religiously and culturally adjust that is more useful for Krishna? You know? So then it works better. So that's the whole point. So does that make sense? You know, and like that, there's, I think, like 50 different you know, gurus on how you can organize it. You know, deal with those mechanical points you mentioned. You know. So the point is when we understand is it descends, then we start looking at what's the essence. Like we saw the other day, we were looking at, you know, something that's been a bit of a bewilderment for the last, you know, so many years. That, you know, all the different expansions of Krishna. But we see when Lord Chaitanya explains it, he says that there's three aspects. Swayam Rupa, Tadekatma Rupa, and Avesha Rupa. That's it. Then within that, everything else is there. So when you put that as the main, and put everything else into it, how it relates in within that context, then it starts to make sense. And then you see the line how one goes to the next. But if you start off just how, well, this one goes here, and then he went to Dorka there, and then this one here, and then that one's over there, and then something doesn't match, but it kind of has something here, so why don't we put it over here, and you know, all these kind of things, then it won't make any sense. So you have to, as it's the descending aspect, like of the soul, servant of Krishna, that's the essential point. So servant of Krishna, okay, but now what service do they do? Okay. You do service according to your physical, psychological nature. What defines that? Right? You know, so in the Shastra, that's defined by Guru Rupa. Right?
For the Sanskrit.
No. Guru Rupa.
What's that in English?
You know, the unspeakable, you know, it's right up there with Voldemort, you know, like that. Varnashram defines that. Prabhupada talks about it. He says that's what you use. He says that's what the managers use. But, well, we can't use that because, oh, then you're saying that this one's this and that one's that. But then how can you say that, you know, make all this hierarchy yourself? Why are you making these distinctions? I bet you can't use Varnashram? So the whole point is that that's the point. You start with, if we're servants of Krishna, then you have to say how you serve and what you will serve according to your physical and psychological nature. That's how you serve. Varnashram then defines that. You know, and of course, because it's about service to Krishna, we're only going to use Varnashram as far as it's useful in service to Krishna. We won't go farther. So the smartas may take it, you know, way out in left field. We won't do that. That's why Daiva Varnashram. It's only that much. Does that make sense? So when you start with that essential point, then it all falls into place. But if we use whatever we think or whatever we've heard, then it's not going to... That's why Krishna says in the Gita, you know, you come to a point when whatever you've heard or whatever you will hear, that doesn't matter. It's about Krishna. That's the central point. All these other points, if they match in and support, great. But otherwise, who uses the book? Let's say if you take someone who's actually, let's say, an administrator somewhere, you know, real live on the ground doing it, and it's working, and you hand him one of these self-help books, he'll go through it and he'll, you know, yeah, this point is good, or that point's good, or that's point, a few points out of the whole book. And he'll say, yeah, we use that, or yeah, I could consider that more. That's it. They won't take the book as a Bible and use it. So they're not doing it, so why would we do it? But what the Vedas are, you see, every person who's doing, they're all saying the same thing. And these are, and the people who are saying these things are guys who are managing the universe, managing, you know, it means the whole universe, or part of the universe, or a planet. You know, we don't have anyone less than managing a planet. You know, offering prayers in the Bhagavatam. You know, that's like minimum qualification, right? You know. But, you know, some of them up on the Manolever, some of them up on Indra, some Brahma, like this, you know, big, big God. And then they all say from this descending point. And so if they're so good and their viewpoint is this descending, it must work. But because we've grown up in this other, And therefore, we try to, you know, we engage our attachments, yes, but you can't say the attachments are the standard. That's when you make your mistake. That's the fatal mistake. You're smiling.
Because I was thinking in the Bhagavatam, as soon as they try to implement the ascending process, then we see trouble.
Yes.
Indra, Brahma.
Yes.
Shiva.
Yes, yes. The whole Brahma Vimohan Lila. That he wants to, by Pratyaksha, see if this guy Krishna. And Shiva, then what?
You know, Mohini.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay.
And the Govardhan Lila, of course.
Yeah, with Indra.
So as soon as they shift and try to, you know, be their own man,
yeah,
then there's trouble. And embarrassment, of course.
Yes, and embarrassment. So it's a shift in mentality. But now, it's not an academic shift in mentality. It's a matter of appreciating that the acharyas have said this, great personalities have followed this, they've gotten perfection. And so with that faith, then we take up the chanting in the association of Vaishnavas. And then we move forward. And then, because if you're open to it, Krishna will reveal it. But if we're saying, oh, it doesn't work, or like what was the other day is, oh, well, you know, I got to get this course. I don't have time to work this out. I only have, you know, 3 months to put together this course. I can't try to use a different system than what I already know. You know, they were from an academic background. They're going to use that and so like that because they know they've seen it work in the classroom. They were in the classroom. They hate it in the classroom. And so naturally they'll be able to make their students the same. You know, that's the whole point of teaching, right? You know, you remove doubts, you get people to contemplate it, you get them to value it, and then you get them to make others like you. You know, and then along with it comes the pride, comes all these other things. You know, I was asking one senior devotee, main preacher and everything, in one of the big temples, and ask him, says, I noticed on the board it says that the Bhakti Shastri class is being run by this Bhaktin. And so, you know, I'd ask how long, you know, the problem wasn't that it was a lady, the problem was, is, you know, they've been around new, but because they're Bhaktin and they lived outside, then, you know, they have the time to get away and come to India, go to one of the courses, get the things, do the, you know, and because you can get in the 10 days and you're a teacher and Hari Bal, and then they come back and they can teach there. And I said, why aren't you teaching? He says, I'm not allowed to. Only she's the only one qualified.
She's got the paper.
She got the paper. So yes, by modern academic system, maybe, you know, on some level, she can teach you this inductive method of Krishna consciousness as far as understanding the deductive and the values of it. There's a good chance there's not a lot happening. Otherwise, if that's true, since this has been running so strongly for now, you know, like 20 years, then why is it that we're getting more stranger and stranger questions in class about the nature of God, nature of the soul, and nature of the material world? They would have answered these things, and people would be solid and ready to move forward. But you're getting questions now that people before would never ask because they had faith.
This is such a good one. The questions that, I mean, the kind of questions I get all the time, I'm thinking, what have you been waiting for?
Yeah, so even if they're reading, they're only looking for facts.
Yes.
You know, and even then, it's just to know the facts. It's not how that fact applies in my life. How can I use this? You know, and what does it mean? You know, it means according to what Prabhupada and the Acharyas say, or Krishna says, not according to what we think it is. You know, equality means seeing all living entities as soul, as eternal servant of Krishna. That's equality. But how you're going to deal with them is according to their physical and mental condition. Right? You know, otherwise you're going to get like, you know, our, what do you call it? Our, probably, what do you call it? Foolish Pujari in Calcutta? Foolish Pujari. Like that who's sitting there and the dog comes and steals one of his chapatis, and he's, you know, because he sees everybody as Narayan, says, wait, you know, you didn't get any ghee on your chapati, you know, like that kind of stuff. No, it's a dog, you know. He's not supposed to steal the chapatis. So then you end up with those speculative things. So that's the whole point, is you have to understand what the philosophy is and everything like that. We said something wrong or something?
I get it.
Oh, okay. It's jokingly like that, but in the past, no, people would leave when we talked like this. They'd be, just get up and leave. They can't. And a few with more cultured would stay for the class, never come back.
That's the Russian style.
Oh, okay. I said their smile and everything.
Yeah. That's it.
We've
never seen them before.
Seen again, yeah. It's better than the Chinese. They take you out back and shoot you, right?
No, what they do is they ask you one question, then they'll ask six other devotees in this class the same thing. Then they'll pick the one that the answer is more satisfying.
It's more satisfying. Okay. Yeah. Oh, that's in China. Yeah. In Russia, they'll do the same thing, but it's not so much to pick which one's the better one. It's to see what kind of argument I can create and get the taste off the energy coming off of that, you know.
They also tell you whom they already asked.
Yeah. It says, but that's after they've asked you the question and you've answered it. Then they'll tell you, no, but Maharaj said this.
The surprise.
Yeah, because they want to create the, you know, and then they sit, you know, it's like they, like chicken fights or something, you know, get them together and then stand back and watch, and then they start betting on the side. Who do you think?
You know? That's right. In the early days, most of the classes were Sankirtan classes.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what the verses on the board is about. Yeah.
Sarva Dharma, see, surrender. Manmanab, think of the books. Yeah. But it works. The point is there is one pointed focus. And by doing that, there's purification. And they were chanting nicely, they were dealing nicely. You had to deal nicely with the other devotees. And so like this, and then there's advancement. Now if with that, then by the classes that are going on, you're also developing in these other aspects, then you'll see you'll have a foundation. Otherwise, then they'll go for some time. And if they are someone who's an eternal Sankirtan devotee, then they're still there today. But if not, they'll be gone and they won't know enough, that they won't know how to deal with it. Then the doubts come up, no one teaches that, you have to go to the karmis for this. And then that brings in the whole thing, and then people agree with that. Because they don't know. But the whole point is it's all right there. You know, the Shastras tell how all these things work. So, does that make sense? So the main thing is just we accept that that process is there. That Prabhupada and the Acharyas are always talking about the descending process. We accept that the speculative process will not make us understand Krishna. We accept that. Then we surrender to Krishna, that I don't understand that, and he is the super soul, will arrange. Like that. But that, there has to be that faith, or at least, as Prabhupada points out in the opening to the Gita, at least you have to theoretically accept that the position of Krishna. Right? So he's saying that spirit. The first thing he talks about is the spirit of understanding. So he's starting with Prajumna. It's what's the attitude. That's the first thing that you have to go after. So nowadays they talk about attitude, but it's attitude on how to be successful and how to feel confident with yourself and, you know, how to get this done or that done. But it's not the spirit, the mood of how this is going to connect to Krishna and please Krishna. As a main focus. Because if that's there, then descending, all the detail will come down. But we'd make all this detail and forget where it's going. Otherwise, you know what I'm saying? Otherwise, how could they not use Varnashram? It's kind of like the main... If you want to manage and you don't use Varnashram, that's weird. That's like saying, I'm going to fix my car, but I'm not going to use any wrenches. You know, it's like, then what are you going to do? You know, sing to it or something? And Kumbaya, my car. Kumbaya. Yeah. No. Sorry. You never sang Kumbaya to your car? No. Stuck out there in the middle of the, what is it, Negev Desert? You know, you start singing something, you know.
Oh, yeah, we have
the okay, yeah, yeah. You can do a dance around the car. Maybe it'll work. You know.
It actually helps.
Yeah, okay, see? That or a very overly large wrench or stick, and you just start beating it. That's the Russian system. And it works. The amazing thing is why it works, I don't know, but it works.
Different systems, like karma, yang.
Yeah, yeah, different like that, you know. The American tries to get in with all the wrenches, that's not working, and then the Russian comes along and just starts yelling at it and beating and that, and then it starts. You know,
Indians
so.
Only kick.
Huh?
Indians only kick.
Only kick, okay, that works. Give it a kick. Mode of goodness, yeah. But the interesting thing, I don't know if it's still there, but I read something, it was some time back. They said the best mechanics in the world for practical making things work are the Indian mechanics. They can make anything work. You know, keep it running, you know? Like that, because you have an ambassador, it comes off the line, it's already falling apart, but they can keep it running for the next 50 years.
African is also good.
Oh, yeah.
They don't even have a workshop, just on the side of the road.
Yeah.
He's got his tools, and then he sees it's like falling apart, okay, and he stops fixing it, and it's running.
To the next guy. So they space themselves. They know how far to... Okay, this will get you 1 kilometer. The next guy's there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how you solve the unemployment problem. You solve the unemployment
problem. Yeah, and you solve the unemployment problem. Yeah, something. Yeah, so basically when one has that faith that nothing else other than bhakti will actually work, you know, give the results... And bhakti already includes all other processes. When one has that faith, then the process becomes very dynamic. So then the whole point of the educational is to remove all doubts and misgivings about bhakti being the process, the one and only. That's what it's for. So... Yeah, because as soon as you say that, people say, yes, that's nice, but that's what the whole process, this educational process, is to remove those. It's funny, just as the sun goes, then immediately you get that little bit of cold. And it tracks. Yes.
So isn't it that actually by humbly begging to develop the taste, we actually get understanding of the mechanics?
Yes, of course. The mechanics come along with it. Means if you, what I get, the point is if you have the desire, then Krishna will fulfill that desire. That's the point of independence. You don't have the desire, then it won't. You won't get that. It's whatever you're interested in, that's where you'll go. Of course, along with it, whatever your interest, any material interest also carries the miseries along with it. So you're going to get, you know, how you say, disturbances and obstacles on the way. But as soon as you desire Krishna, that's what we see is in the advanced levels of devotional service is talking about when you have that greed. That's the dynamic thing that makes it go forward. When you always want it. You know, it's just like the example someone gave. Example, you go up to the door and just, you kind of go, what was that? And there's nothing more. You won't take it seriously. But someone's always knocking on the door. You answer the door. You know what I'm saying? Sheldon knocks, people answer. No? No? So that's the whole thing, is that desire, you have to want it. So that's the point, is that faith means that's what you want, because you're fixed. Right? So nishta means you're fixed in that faith, because that's only what you want. And if you want other things, it will always be below nishta. But you might find someone that, let's say in chanting the japa, there's nishta, or some other aspects is nishta, but other parts of their life it's not. But you try to get it where, in general, everything in your life is together, then you'd call that platform nishta. Then from there, because it's steady, naturally you get a taste. Then it becomes very dynamic and moves forward. As soon as it's a taste, then that's what you want. So we can see is that desire makes it move forward very nicely. Yeah?
So actually those who are trying to use these mechanical, academical ways to reach, to get a taste, it's actually proof they don't have the taste.
Yeah, basically. Means they may start like that. See, the point is wherever your background is, so if you have that kind of mechanistic background, you start from there. But the point is it still has to be, it's about pleasing Krishna, not about the perfection of the mechanics.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, then, we get so much into it. Like today, somebody sent a thing about, there's some talk about they're going to Mars. And they say Mars is this far away, but in the Bhagavatam it says, no, it's this far away. Like that, which is the interesting thing, is they say the moon's close, but it's far. They say Mars is far, but it's actually it's closer. And you know, it's all these different things. And so then, you know, how do we reconcile all that? It's like, why do we need to? You know, so I mean, what's the importance? What does it do with your life? Like your toaster won't work until you've reconciled this. You know, the refrigerator light won't go on, so you can't see, and so you're going to starve to death until you work this out. It has no impact on your life whatsoever.
And even they get only a few rocks from there.
You get a few rocks, and whether they go there or not, like I was saying, is when I was a kid, America was supposedly went to the moon, right? No one else went to the moon. Everybody else said you can't go to the moon. Especially means that they wouldn't talk too loud. But Russians said definitely you can't go to the moon. How do you get through the Van Allen belt? Says it's not happening. It's so much radiation. Unless, you know, the walls were like 8 feet, you know, like, 2.5-3 meters thick, you know, of solid lead. You can't get through. So you can't get something like that in space. But then last year with the 50th anniversary, you know, they're all talking about it again, as if it's, you know, all these years are they like this, oh, we can't do it, and this and that. Talking, yeah, you know, like, you know, as if, you know, it's been. I just saw something recently. It says, yes, only America, I think Russia and China have been to the moon. And it's kind of like, when did that happen? You know? When did these happen? You know, so, you know, others are there for considering, and I think it was with, you know, what is it? Our Mr. Musk.
Yeah.
You know, he's trying to do something, you know, like, you know, shuttle service to the moon or something like that, you know.
He's going to the Mars.
Hmm?
He's going to the Mars.
He's going to Mars?
He.
Oh, okay. Okay, he's going to Mars.
He just sent photos from Mars this morning.
Him?
He just sent photos. The thing has landed, taking plenty of photos. There's nobody there. They just went 7-Eleven.
One 7-Eleven. And what about the Ak-Ak Wallers? You know, they're not there. Oh, because they were in the crevice.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the thing. They're on the flat part. Yeah.
There is a every time you see it, there's a very very short video clip of the astronauts on the moon. You know, like
yeah, they're bouncing around.
And suddenly, one guy opens the door.
Oh, so it looks in. It closes the door, okay. So they had to edit that part out. Yeah. Yeah. You know, so therefore, that's the whole thing, is that they went, didn't went, what does it matter? They say they went, they say, but, you know, what was that, you know, Trump said he'd build a wall. Did he build a wall? No. Yeah, you know, everybody says they're going to do something. The FDR was a chicken in every pot and a car in every garage. Did it happen? No. So, the point is, they say all kinds of stuff. Who cares? It doesn't affect our lives. You know, they say, no, but this science and that. Well, how do you know? How do you know it's not politics? Right? You know, something's going on and people are getting bored. You have to come up with something. Right? They didn't do that. Where was it? In Denmark? They had riots. England gets riots.
Practically every country has riots.
Now. Yeah, because they're not giving us something else to do. So this guy at least giving something else to do. You know? So that's the whole point. Is Manu says that when when there's a particular attitude, then you can do certain political things. If the attitude's not there, you can't do those things. You know, so how do we know what it is? So why do we care? And even if he says that, someone else will say, you know, it's something else. Like, you know, is it string theory or is it, you know, what is it? What's the other one? Forget the other one. Like that. Now they have a new one, dark matter. So there's three.
They say it's particle something.
Yeah, particle theory, string theory, and now dark matter. And each one doesn't like the other. Each one fights with the other. You know, so then, okay, science, which one is it? So then they don't have an absolute. So then why worry about it?
Dark matter is already a decade ago. Dark matter is already a decade ago.
A decade ago.
15 years before the Nobel laureate came to our college.
Well, then you don't hear anything more. But I mean, still, the quantum goes back, I think, 100 years or something. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just going to fight over this and that. So that's the difficulty. Why do we need to get involved? Who cares? So we see here is that the whole point is that Krishna's beauty is the most attractive. And that's the aspect, that's the most wonderful aspect. He's the original source of all transcendental qualities. So that's the point, is he's talking about the qualities, the experience that they get. That's what Lord Chaitanya is discussing here. Like that. Not that other aspects aren't important. He's discussed that earlier. But this is what we're trying to deal with. And so dealing with this, then the other points have importance. But if they're not approaching this, what's the point of them? What does it add to our lives? Is that what he says? Yeah. So here it says, good behavior, mildness, and magnanimity are found only in Krishna. Like, so other Narayanas and that, they don't manifest these three qualities. Only Krishna performs welfare activities for the whole world. What he does, everybody can relate to. Another, they'll do a specific thing for a specific time. Like that. 221, 122, 126. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued. After seeing Krishna, various people criticized the blinking of their eyes. In Vrindavan, especially, all the gopis criticized Lord Brahma because of this defect in the eyes. Then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recited some verses from Srimad Bhagavatam and explained them vividly, thus enjoying the taste of transcendental sweetness with great happiness. Quote, all men and women were accustomed to enjoying the beauty of the shining face of Lord Krishna, as well as his shark-shaped earrings swinging on his ears, his beautiful features, his cheeks, and his playful smiles all combined to form a constant festival for the eyes. And the blinking of the eyes became obstacles that impeded one from seeing that beauty. For this reason, men and women became very angry at the Creator, Lord Brahma. Footnote 14. This verse is Srimad Bhagavatam 9:24-65, spoken by Srila Sukadeva Goswami. Quote, O Krishna, when you go to the forest during the day and we do not see your sweet face, which is surrounded by beautiful curly hair, half a second becomes as long as an entire age for us. And we consider the Creator who has put eyelids on the eyes we use for seeing you to be simply a fool. Footnote 15. This verse is spoken by the gopis in Srimad Bhagavatam 10:31-15. So they're seeing it in relationship to service to Krishna. So if it's seeing Krishna, then the eyelids are getting in the way. Like that. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is identical with the Vedic hymn known as the Kama Gayatri, which is composed of 24.5 syllables. Those syllables are compared to moons that arise in Krishna. Thus, all three worlds are filled with desire. The face of Krishna is the king of all moons, and the body of Krishna is the throne. Thus, the king governs the society of moons. Srila Prabhupada, Krishna's face is considered the king of moons, and his body is considered the throne. All the other chandras, moons, are considered to be subordinate moons. His left cheek is a moon. His right cheek is a moon. His forehead is considered a half moon. The spot of sandalwood pulp on his forehead is considered a moon. And his fingernails and toenails are also different moons, totaling 24.5. Right? So the half is that the forehead. So the point is he is the Kama Gayatri. He's identical with. Therefore, he has 24 moons. The Gayatri itself has 24.5 syllables. Like that. Does that make sense? 221, 127, 137. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, Krishna has two cheeks that shine like glowing gems. Both are considered full moons. His forehead is considered a half moon, and the spot of sandalwood there is considered a full moon. His fingernails are many full moons, and they dance on the flute in his hands. Their song is the melody of that flute. His toenails are also many full moons, and they dance on the ground. Their song is the jingling of his ankle bells, right? So they're dancing, and so one is the flute song and one is the ankle bells. You know, so you're going to get the melody, you're going to get the tall. And so in this way, then the dancing goes nicely, right? Because you have to have both, right, together. Krishna's face is the enjoyer king. That full moon face makes his sharp-shaped earrings and his lotus eyes dance. His eyebrows are like bows, and his eyes are like arrows. His ears are fixed on the string of that bow, and when his eyes spread to his ears, he pierces the heart of the gopis. The dancing features of his face surpass all other full moons and expand the marketplace of full moons. So his face is the main moon, and then all these other moons, they add to the beauty of his face. Puditat. The dancing features of his face surpass all other full moons and expand the marketplace of full moons. Although priceless, the nectar of Krishna's face is distributed to everyone. Some purchase the moon rays of his sweet smiles, and others purchase the nectar of his lips. Thus he pleases everyone. Krishna has two reddish, widely spread eyes. These are ministers of the king, and they subdue the pride of Cupid, who also has beautiful eyes. That face of Govinda, which is full of happiness, is the home of the pastimes of beauty, and is very pleasing to everyone's eyes. If, by devotional service, one gets the results of pious activities and sees Lord Krishna's face, what can he relish with only two eyes? His greed and thirst increase twofold by seeing the nectarine face of Krishna. Due to his inability to sufficiently drink that nectar, he becomes very unhappy and criticizes the Creator for not having given more than two eyes. When the onlooker of Krishna's face becomes dissatisfied in this way, he thinks, why didn't the Creator give me thousands and millions of eyes? Why has He given me only two? Even these two eyes are disturbed by blinking, which keeps me from constantly seeing Krishna's face. End quote. Thus one accuses the Creator of being dry and tasteless due to engaging in severe austerities. Right? Because he's very fixed on getting all his work done, but he says, no, but you made a mistake here. You know, you didn't consider the taste, right? The Creator is only a dry manufacturer. He does not know how to create and set things in their proper places. The Creator says, let those who will see Krishna's beautiful face have two eyes, end quote. Just see the lack of consideration exhibited by this person posing as a creator. If the Creator took my advice, He would give millions of eyes to the person who intends to see Sri Krishna's face. If the Creator will accept this advice, then I would say that he is competent in His work." End quote. The transcendental form of Lord Sri Krishna is compared to an ocean. A particularly extraordinary vision is the moon above that ocean. Sri Krishna's face, and is the moon above that ocean, Sri Krishna's face. And an even more extraordinary vision is His smile, which is sweeter than sweet. It is like the shining beams of moonlight. So then you have His body, it's like the ocean, and then the rising moon above that, and then the sweetness of His smile. While speaking of these things with Sanatana Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to remember one thing after another. Moving His hands in ecstasy, He recited a verse. "O my Lord, the transcendental body of Krishna is very sweet, and His face is even sweeter than His body. But His soft smile, which has the fragrance of honey, is sweeter still." Footnote 16. This verse is quoted from Krishna Kari Namrita 92 by Bilva Mangal Thakur. "My dear Sanatana, the sweetness of Krishna's personality is just like an ocean of ambrosia. Although my mind is now afflicted by convulsive diseases, I wish to drink that entire ocean. The repressive physician does not allow me to drink even one drop." Srila Prabhupada. "When there is a combination of kapha, pitta, and vayu, the three bodily elements, there occurs sannipati, or a convulsive disease. Lord Chaitanya said, this disease of mine is caused by the personal features of Lord Krishna. The three elements are the beauty of Krishna's body, the beauty of His face, and the beauty of His smile. Stricken by these three beauties, my mind goes into convulsions. I wish to drink the ocean of Krishna's beauty, but because I am undergoing convulsions, my physician, who is Sri Krishna Himself, does not even allow me to take a drop of water from that ocean." End quote. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was ecstatic in this way because he was presenting himself in the mood of the gopis. The gopis wanted to drink the ocean of sweetness arising from the bodily features of Krishna, but Krishna did not allow them to come near. Consequently, their desire to meet Krishna increased. And being unable to drink the ambrosia of Krishna's personal bodily features, they became very unhappy. 221, 138 to 144. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued. "Krishna's body is a city of attractive features. It is sweeter than sweet. His face, which is like the moon, is sweeter still. And the supremely sweet, gentle smile on that moon-like face is like rays of moonshine. The beauty of Krishna's smile is the sweetest feature of all. His smile is like a full moon that spreads its rays throughout the three worlds. Goloka Vrindavan, the spiritual sky of the Vaikunthas, and Devi Dham, the material world." So he sees that the all three features, the whole cosmos, his smile is so sweet, it goes throughout everything, throughout Goloka, goes throughout Vaikuntha and the material world. So that's why he's saying before is Krishna's the only one who does something for everybody. Like that. "Thus Krishna's smiling beauty spreads in all 10 directions. His slight smiling and fragrant illumination are compared to camphor, which enters the sweetness of his lips. That sweetness is transformed and enters into space as vibrations from the holes of his flute. The sound of Krishna's flute spreads in the four directions. Even though Krishna vibrates his flute within this universe, its sound pierces the universal covering and goes to the spiritual sky. Thus the vibration enters the ears of all inhabitants. It especially enters Goloka Vrindavan Dham and attracts the minds of the young damsels of Brajabhumi, bringing them forcibly to where Krishna is present. The vibration of Krishna's flute is very aggressive, and it breaks the vows of all chaste women. Indeed, its vibration takes them forcibly from the laps of their husbands. The vibration of his flute attracts even the goddesses of fortune in the Vaikuntha planets, to say nothing of the poor damsels of Vrindavan. The vibration of his flute slackens the knots of their underwear, even in front of their husbands. Thus, the gopis are forced to abandon their household duties and come before Lord Krishna. In this way, all social etiquette, shame, and fear are vanquished. The vibration of his flute causes all women to dance. The vibration of his flute is just like a bird that creates a nest within the ears of the gopis and always remains prominent there, not allowing any other sound to enter their ears. Indeed, the gopis cannot hear anything else, nor are they able to concentrate on anything else, not even to give a suitable reply. Such are the effects of the vibration of Lord Krishna's flute. Like, you know, if a bird sets up and sets a nest there, then they're chirping there, that's all you hear. Right? Srila Prabhupada. The vibration of Krishna's flute is always prominent in the ears of the gopis. Naturally, they cannot hear anything else. Constant remembrance of the holy sound of Krishna's flute keeps them enlightened and enlivened, and they do not allow any other sound to enter their ears. Since their attention is fixed on Krishna's flute, they cannot divert their minds to any other subject. In other words, a devotee who has heard the sound of Krishna's flute forgets to talk or hear of any other subject. This vibration of Krishna's flute is represented by the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. A serious devotee of the Lord who chants and hears this transcendental vibration becomes so accustomed to it that he cannot divert his attention to any subject matter not related to Krishna's blissful characteristics and paraphernalia.
Lord Chaitanya is quoting some verses or is speaking in
Sanskrit? Let's see. I'm not sure because there's a double quotation at the end, but only a single at the beginning.
Mostly speaking according to the origin.
Yeah, but I don't see any other footnote. Generally, you see before when it's been mentioned, the footnote will be there. Prabhupada will stay in the purport, the verse. But this that yes, that was mentioned before. But this it seems to be he's just speaking himself. Yes, resuming his external consciousness. Yeah, it seems to be him. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Sanatan Goswami, I have not spoken of what I intended. Lord Krishna is very merciful to you because by bewildering my mind, he has revealed his personal opulence and sweetness. He has caused you to hear all these things from me for your understanding. Oh, okay. Yeah, no, so it was just him speaking. Srila Prabhupada. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu admitted that he was speaking like a madman, which he should not have done for the understanding of those who are externally situated. Statements about Krishna's body, his characteristics, and his flute would appear like a madman's statements to a mundane person. It was actually a fact that Krishna wanted to reveal himself to Sanatan Goswami due to a specific mercy upon him. Somehow or other, Krishna explained himself and his flute to Sanatan Goswami through the mouth of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who appeared as though mad. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu admitted that he wanted to tell Sanatan Goswami something else, but somehow or another, in transcendental ecstasy, he spoke of a different subject matter. 221, 146, 149. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu concluded, since I have become a madman, I am saying one thing instead of another. This is because I am being carried away by the waves of the nectarian ocean of Lord Krishna's transcendental sweetness. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then remained silent for a moment. Finally, adjusting things within his mind, he again spoke to Sanatan Goswami. If anyone gets an opportunity to hear about the sweetness of Krishna in this chapter of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, he will certainly be eligible to float in the transcendentally blissful ocean of love of God. Praying at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Sri Raghunath, always desiring their mercy, I, Krishna Das, narrate Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, following in their footsteps. Yes. Conclusion. Sri Krishna's qualities are infinite and ever-expanding. Even a fractional understanding of Krishna's beauty can merge all three worlds in the ocean of love. Oh, just that one. Wow. And now we understand three means either these three worlds, or it can mean, you know, the worlds, you know, here up to Mahavishnu, or it can mean Devi Dham, Hari Dham, and Goloka Dham.
Maharaj.
Yes.
Interesting. This chapter of Srila Prabhupada reading in 66 in New York.
Yes. Yes, you see, if you listen to those early chapters, all these technical points that we're talking about and that and the sandarbhas and all these other things Prabhupada's talking about. So it's the basic nature. And he speaks, people understand. Devotees used to talk these things. You know. So the point is it's not accessible. It can be done. It's just Prabhupada's very expert at how to present them. And so it becomes accessible and not dry. That was his expertise, is how to give the most technical points in a very accessible way. Like that. Sometimes people make the mistake that, oh, he only spoke simple stuff. Not at all.
He started right from the top.
Yeah, like that. And so you see, well, you even see it in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita. He gives the opening why he wrote it, but immediately then he's talking about the pharasas. And then going on to explain. So the whole point is the acharyas don't have a problem bringing out Krishna, but then they're explaining as they're going all the technical points, you know, that need to go along with it. Like that. You know, so sometimes you see someone gets a very technical, elaborate thing like that, and the very last just mentioned that little thing and that's it. Well, what about that? No, it's not expressed. You know. So that's the thing. They'll say something, take it up to Krishna like this, and then discuss things, then bring out another point and like that. So, because that's how they see. That's the point. They only see Krishna, so therefore they only talk about Krishna. We don't necessarily always see Krishna. We talk about a lot of other things. Yeah? Okay. Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Shri Prabhupada ki Jai.